In 2013, Upper Peninsula readers, writers, and booksellers chose the region's first poet laureate. The two-year tenure brought a commitment fulfilled by presentations, teaching, and generally promoting UP letters and the region itself. We're about to begin the third cycle. Just ahead, we'll talk with the first UP laureate and with the final two nominees for 2017 about the office, the work, and how it reflects Upper Peninsula experience. We'll also hear some poems on our way to announcing the new UP Poet Laureate right here on Media Meet. Hello and welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Our guest poets are 2013-2014 UP Poet Laureate Russell Thorburn of Marquette, Kathleen Heideman of Marquette, and Marty Aketz of Ishpeming. Aketz?
Aketz.
Aketz. Okay, there we are. Russ, you were the very first UP Poet Laureate. What do you recall about how the honorary position came about?
I was in this room. You're sitting about right there. Okay. And my jaw dropped wide open. There was like more of us here together for that announcement from Donald Hall, which is like a phone message, I believe. And it was very surprising because it was wide open. I didn't really have any sense of what was going to happen, you know. I mean, there's some good people in there.
Yeah. Were you aware of the process up to that point?
Just vaguely, librarians and booksellers and readers. I mean, I didn't really meet any of those particular people, but I'm always friends with librarians, so might have put me over the top.
Have you communicated since with Donald Hall?
No, I haven't.
Okay. What laureate activities did you undertake? Readings, lectures, school projects, performances? Were you following any specific guidelines in doing these sorts of things?
No guidelines, but I had been working in the schools, you know, as a poet in residence for maybe a dozen years. So I went back to a middle school, one of my favorite classes, and then maybe the best thing I did as the poet laureate, the sixth graders, there's about 30 of them, wrote an Absidarian poem. Except they were divided up into A, B, C, D, E.
Sure. Okay.
And then I came in, they had written like maybe 10 to 20 lines about nature, about cities, about weather, about anything.
Okay.
So I came in like the orchestra conductor, and then I picked like four or five lines from each and put it together as one long poem. Mm-hmm. And then we read it. They lined up and read. X, Y, and Z, I think they had to cover for all that, one person or someone absent.
Okay.
And then Stan Wright read it like a libretto on public radio. It was really cool.
Okay.
That was a very exciting event for me.
Did you find yourself discovering or counseling any new poets during your time as UP laureate?
Well, yes, all the time. I mean,
okay.
Going up to, you know, to Finlandia University, that was the first thing I did.
Mm-hmm.
I did a workshop, at their the gallery, the name escapes me. But anyways, it was like Mikio Kallio, this kind of fiber art drawing Finnish artist, was just there. And he had these very small, very kind of like the magician, these whimsical names and faces, and so I did a reading in the beautiful hall there, and we brought everyone out, and they were writing poems about these magical faces on the wall there. And, you know, it was very cool. I enjoyed that very much.
Okay. Andrea Scarpino was chosen UP Laureate for 2015 and 16. Unfortunately, she couldn't be with us today, but we look forward to having her here another time. Any observations on her tenure?
Well, Bards and Brews is a big thing that she set up, I mean, a year ago, and then I think that's still continuing.
Tell us about that.
Well, people read at the Orta and drink beer.
Okay.
Down in Grand Rapids, they have Pints and Poetry,
okay,
a similar thing, which I want to go down and read at,
right.
Pints and Poetry. And so I think that was a good thing that she did. And then a lot of people get up to the mic and then, you know, and here's, I'm going to read some poems. And then and then people watch and, you know, it's, then you can have another pint.
Okay. Let's get a sample of poetry right here from Russ Thorburn. This is on a an occasion fairly recent, actually. Death of Leonard Cohen, is that correct?
Yes, I had this dream, which you'll hear in a minute, and then the next morning I discovered Leonard Cohen died, and the dream was about walking around in Montreal, 1976.
Okay. Well, let's hear The Night Leonard Cohen Died.
The night Leonard Cohen died, I discovered I was swimming with you down some river that could have been the Ganges, the color of yellow, and you were swimming naked. I had swum through other dreams with you, many real, like parading your daughter in a heavy summer rain across Montreal, neither of us wearing famous blue raincoats. But thinking of Leonard Cohen, his voice of rust breaking off word by word when we sat down to listen to his imitators. You were a better swimmer, burying me in your splashes and reaching out of your body for someone else. You saw it was only me and laughed, but laughter was a medicine, a drug, a way to come closer to an undying love. Your cut-off jeans on the grass, your long legs kicking you into the middle of that yellow river. In Montreal, we peered into the rainy windows of a Polish restaurant, customers inside eating, and we wiped their wetness from our cheeks, hungry for what we couldn't translate. Your face wept in the rain, a lover who couldn't make up her mind if I was the only one. And on this rainy day, we expected Leonard Cohen. But who could see anything in this biblical deluge as if he waited just across the street looking back at us from another cafe? And I knew one day your voice would be heard as an echo in some deep cave of sorrow. I wasn't aware of you drowning until you lost your stroke. And before I righted your body, you were gone in my disturbed mind, your face, this kind of surprise, staring up.
The Night Leonard Cohen Died, read by Russ Thorburn, written and read by Russ Thorburn. Kathleen, have you seen more interest or enthusiasm for poetry among peers generally since the UP Poet Laureate post was created?
Yeah, I feel that it's really generated a lot of interest. People have a great amount of pride in the fact that the UP has its own Poet Laureate position now, that there are states with state poet laureates, but the UP always feels separate. Even if Michigan had a Michigan state poet, you know, like we'd want our own anyway. But I've seen such an amazing response with the local, and I'm just speaking just Marquette here, but the Marquette Poet Circle. Just a week ago, we had an event at the public library that there were probably 40 people on a Monday night. 40, 45 people sitting there just listening to a poetry, and it was open mic, so anybody could sign up. So it's really like a grassroots poetry sort of happening that's taking place right now.
Ahead, Marty? Yeah. Marty Ackett.
Yeah, I live in Ishpeming, so I'm about 20 miles removed from Marquette. But at the Carnegie Library, I do readings there frequently. And the first reading that I did there was, there wasn't that many people. And then, you know, I think that the Poet Laureate has really kind of focused interest on it. And the last reading that I did at Carnegie was at right around Christmas time. And there must have been like 25, 30, 40 people, which is like filling a stadium for a poetry reading. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was really amazing.
Okay.
And everyone keeps asking about it too. Like, have you heard yet? Have you heard? Who's the poet
absolutely.
Laureate? Like, there's a lot of interest.
Wonderful. Let's look at the backgrounds of the poets assembled. Russ, you're originally from Birmingham, Michigan. Kathleen, you're a rural Wisconsin native, I understand. And Marty, you're from Ishpeming,
yes.
Right? Where poets are from is often a telling point. How did these beginnings influence your approach to poetry? Mm-hmm. Kathleen?
Well, for me, I grew up just west of Green Bay, little dairy farm, and I like to say that I grew up 200 years ago, you know, because I had an experience that is kind of out of sync with the time we live in. You know, I grew up picking stones and planting crops and baling hay and canning vegetables. And, you know, I have this appreciation for how to do stuff with your own hands in a very sustainable kind of way, which when I fell in love with the UP and with the UPER, like that translated really clearly, because this is a place that's filled with sort of independent people who know how to build things and do stuff and, you know, like really people who are self-sustaining. They can homestead off the grid. They can create their own culture. Sure. You know, which is what we're all called to do, I think, is invent our own culture for the place where we want to live and make it wonderful.
Okay.
Yeah. So growing up on a farm, you learn hard work, and that's that translates very well to the UP.
Yeah.
Hard work.
Growing up in a mining town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, my family originally came from Detroit.
Okay.
And so I have very little memories of Detroit. I came up here when I was very young. And so all of my childhood memories are from Ishpeming, and I just remember when I first came to the city, I remember the red dirt, you know, and how it just got on everything, you know, when you're riding your bike around as a kid and that. And that sort of sticks with you. And I remember seeing the miners. Well, my family's home was right by a mine. Mm-hmm. And so at 3 o'clock every day, as I was walking home from school, all these cars would come blowing by with all the miners coming from there. Mm-hmm. And so that just really stuck with me, that kind of cyclical thing during the day. And, you know, how in Negaunee sometimes at a certain time there's the mine, the explosions at a certain time where the whole town sort of quivers. Mm-hmm. And those things just, you know, seep their way into your poetry. All those details of living in the UP, you just can't avoid it.
Okay. We'd like to take a moment right here to remind our viewers and especially our radio listeners that we're talking about UP Poetry and the UP Poet Laureate Post with 2013-2014 UP Poet Laureate Russell Thorburn of Marquette, Kathleen Heineman of Marquette, and Marty Ackett of Ishpeming.
Mm-hmm.
Russ, you have a serious interest in music, perhaps tied into your Birmingham background, that recent poem about Leonard Cohen, case in point. Where has that taken you as a poet?
Well, I mean, I was growing up underground radio. Mm-hmm. FM radio was big, very big. Magic radio, radio with guts. I mean, things going on. It was like totally different than, you know, WJR AM radio for sure. And, well, I take the bus down Woodward Avenue again in my dreams and go down to Detroit, you know, Wayne State, and I have a book being published by Wayne State, so have very fond memories of Woodward Avenue, the bus, although I've been told that the bus rides are a little different now going down to downtown Detroit. So I would say music was very big because I went to all the concerts, Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, the Kinks, at the Kinks concert at the Easttown Theater, I saw Captain Beefheart. You know, wish I had paid more attention because I really love Captain Beefheart. Now, and it was just, you know, magical times, really.
Okay, it seems implicit in having a regional poet laureate that there's a unique sense of place to the Upper Peninsula, and some are drawn to places like it. How do you view it, Marty?
You know, as I said before, when you live in a region where so much is dependent upon how the weather is and you know, that sometimes you're just holed up in your house for days, sometimes months at a time, depending on the weather. I mean, your life sort of starts revolving around the place and not being able to predict what it's going to be. So, the main thing for me is the lake. It always is a part of my poetry when it somehow just crops up in the most surprising places. The poem that Near Death that I am going to read today. Mm-hmm. I mean, that one is about the first time that I was here and Lake Superior froze over solid. Mm-hmm. And I'd never seen that before, and it was just an amazing thing.
Okay, well, let's take the opportunity to hear that poem. Here's Marty Ackett's reading, Near Death.
Near death. Is it like walking to the South Pole, all white and flat and bright as mirrors? Cold? I bet it's cold. The day Uncle Liam died, Lake Superior froze over for the first time in 20 years. At the beach, I could hear water under the ice, groaning like it hurt, like it was trying to break through but couldn't. Instead, it had to sit there under that lid of snow, gather itself. You know how when you wind up a toy tight enough to snap, then you let it go? It almost sings when it's free, moves so fast it hurts to watch. That was the lake that day. Water just winding and winding, getting ready. I didn't see the ice break in spring, but when it did, I bet that water jumped like a humpback whale, higher and higher, a piece of sky falling up. And I bet it shook the air, a mine shaft collapsing, lava hitting the ocean. That's what it's like, isn't it, when you come that close? It's like being at Dachau when the tanks came roaring through the gates.
Marty Ackett's with Near Death. From which collection is that from?
Actually, that's in a chapbook that I'm currently trying to get published.
So, okay.
Yeah.
So it's a new poem. Mm-hmm. That's great. Every place, we talked about sense of place, every place has a history. Does the history of the region figure in what you're doing and thinking? I know, Kathleen, you have a poem about Barnes Hecker. Russ, you have a poem about Barnes Hecker,
yes.
A mine disaster some years back. Go ahead.
Yeah, I fell in love with the place in grad school way back in the day at NMU, but I got very interested in the history of mining up here. I tend to sort of assign myself projects when I realize I'm curious about something. And the place was so different than my experience. Growing up in farming country in Wisconsin, we had this idea that we owned the land from the surface all the way down to the center of the earth. And up here, you have severed mineral rights. So
sure.
You have this idea that you may only own your house or not even your yard. And yeah. It was this foreign concept to me. And so there are these kind of two different layers.
You can go to a hearing on who's going to buy the land underneath mm-hmm. your house.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. and so I couldn't really understand it until I started all this research. And I just became so appreciative of the history of especially the Nagani area with the caving grounds. Mm-hmm. But that tension continues, you know, even in our wild places. I mean, this week, I love parks. I've worked a lot with the National Park System,
right.
And
you've done a lot of artist and residency.
Yeah, artist residency kind of mm-hmm. experiences. And this week we had the news of drilling in a park. And so you know when you hear this, like there's still this tension between what a place is aesthetically and what a place is in terms of its economic value.
Sure.
And you know the UP is kind of right on ground zero for those tensions.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I gathered from the biographies, this may seem pretty tangential, but each of you was raised Catholic. Marty, your first book is entitled Mysteries of the Rosary. Kathleen, I take you for a poetic pantheist, but maybe with a St. Francis kind of style.
A good dose of guilt.
And Russ, some of your heroes, like James Joyce, were famous Catholics, even apostates, let's say. But the... is Catholicism or spirituality significant to your work, either as a point of view, symbolically, or in any sense?
Well, I like looking at and responding to spirits mm-hmm. and paying respect to those who have died for a particular cause or for something. Mm-hmm. Either they died above ground or underground. Mm-hmm. And they become a character in my poetry or even fiction, mm-hmm. you know, the dead. And so, you know, James Joyce, you know, the
sure,
dead, of course.
The dead.
Mm-hmm. And
short
story. I had a lot of ants, great ants like he had in that short story of the dead, for sure.
Marty?
Well, yeah, I was born and raised, I'm still practicing Catholic, so.
I seem to catch some tension between faith and skepticism in some.
Well, you know what? When you are born and raised that, there's always a healthy dose of skepticism. You know, you just, I think that's just part of human nature, that kind of questioning. Even if you're told, you know, you have to believe this, there's always a part of me as a poet, as a person, mm-hmm. that wants to go, okay, wait a minute, let's examine this a little bit. And that's, I think, what creates that tension in my poetry is, I love reading about lives of saints. And the most interesting thing about the lives of saints is when... is not the traditional hagiography where they're so elevated and lofty, mm-hmm. but where they're these human beings that are right. struggling, and because I can identify with that, and that's what I really love about the Catholicism.
Okay. Yeah. Now, each of you has had experience in education. Mm-hmm. You've taught quite a bit, Kathleen. I know mm-hmm. Russ has. Mm-hmm. And Marty, your reviews are through the roof. Mm-hmm. Students love your classes.
Yeah.
So... I think each of you has a respect for the ordinary reader. I think of Marty's poem of his grandfather meeting Robert Frost, mm-hmm. and you know, as brief as that encounter was, it was very significant for him. Do you make any special effort to win over the ordinary reader? That is, get them interested where they might not mm-hmm. have been before. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Russ.
The ordinary reader. Yes. Well, I spend maybe 2 hours a day at the library easily, mm-hmm. and I was just talking with an ordinary reader and a lover of Richard Brautigan, actually, and how he just printed out a poem, and I said, "What is centered?" Strangely, and they said, "You should, you know, use like line breaks and have it flush to the left side." And so I showed him how to do it literally.
Okay.
Went right in to his poem and then showed him, you know, in the spirit of Phil Levine, of course, you know, one long stanza. And, you know, he was very grateful. So, you know, he was an ordinary reader, I would say. And
okay.
That just happened today.
Yeah, you know, and I think that, for me, that's a part of, again, where you grow up. I mean, I grew up in a town full of miners, and my dad was a plumber for 50 years.
Okay.
So it's always really important to me that I connect with that kind of working class background, because that's exactly where I come out of. And if I can't connect with people like that, then I think I've failed in some way. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my dad's a farmer, my brother's a farmer. If I mean, they'd be my hardest audience because, like, they're not easily amused by highfalutin literary ideas, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I'm also endlessly curious. I'm passionate about science. And mm-hmm. So what has happened over the years is I realize, and also with, like, the environmental work that I do, that I still feel is being an educator, mm-hmm. because the challenge is to share information and raise awareness. That's, you know, no different than what you do when you walk into a mm-hmm. fresh classroom. But people don't learn things people don't learn things until they need them, a lot of times, you know? And I feel like so sometimes you're embedding language contextually into something like, you put a technical word in the middle of common speak. You know, I really love, like, William Stafford, Robert Bly, poems of that, like Donald Hall, very, very, the common man language.
I had to jump for the dictionary in a couple of your poems. It just came up out of nowhere.
But then you drop one in the middle, and it's like you're trying
to... That's the education
part. But, you know, I was just talking with my husband about this morning. Like, you know, nobody wants to be an expert on leukemia either. But if you get sick, all of a sudden, that's like your challenge. And then all of a sudden, you know more than everybody else, you know, because you have to. And so there's always this sort of feeling that poetry can bring you that information that you didn't know you needed, you know?
Okay. We're getting a little pressed for time here. Flaubert said good writing is about finding just the right word for the context, and similar values are reflected in poetry. Today, computers and digital communication seems to have created a kind of devaluation of such notions of language. Is this a barrier to poetry as you understand it, a challenge, an opportunity? How do you see this?
My poems don't fit in tweets, that's for sure.
Okay.
But, you know, I think that's okay. I mean, I have read poems that are tweeted out and serial poem tweeting and, you know, until you get a whole text done. I think the biggest thing is that language is alive and it shifts, but it can become disconnected from, you know, all these acronyms that we, it's because we're so pressed for time. You know, that's why we're relying on them. We're trying to reclaim some space and time. Okay. So, you know, that's what the technology is doing.
I'm afraid we come to the point here. We have to get to Donald Hall.
No, Paul.
Pardon me?
Kathleen's
poem. Video.
My poem. Oh, Kathleen, yes. We have a poem from Kathleen entitled Night Psalms.
Yeah. Night Psalms. Which praise songs do you know? And when do you still sing them? I only ask because it seems the world that remains lacks praise. I only ask because the slow setting sun is lighting up this one white pine like a fine embroidered psalm. The sun is climbing branches, rung by broken rung, saying goodnight by singing the song of a single pine spared by loggers over a century ago, because it was hollow, crooked. Are you hollow and crooked too? Are you still striding, still striving? I watched as the bulldozer shed a metal tooth and kept digging. Do you see the world around you as it darkens, as it dwindles, undermined and cut? Don't you reach out to these trees for a toehold, a branch beyond your wildest reach? Where are the wolves when we need them, when our hearts need their howling? Their furred, elusive tribe is flowing by at the pond's edge, hungry, for even wolves go without sometimes, though they pause to scratch at the sand and claim it, and raise distant cries of pursuit and kinship, call and answer. These are the night psalms. They never fail to raise the hairs along my neck, as if I shared their faith, as if I were fluent in death, as if in my despair I am learning their tongue.
Okay. Night Psalms by Kathleen Heidemann. It's time for us to hear from Donald Hall, U.S. Poet Laureate, on this year's, that is the 2017-2018 UP Poet Laureate.
First of all, I'd like to congratulate the two finalists on the panel, Kathleen Heidemann and Marvin Akins. Just by getting this far means your poetry is appreciated and loved by many people. So here we go. The Upper Peninsula Poet Laureate for 2017-2018 is Martin Akins. Congratulations, Martin, and congratulations to runner-up, Kathleen Heidemann.
Thank you. Congratulations,
Martin. Yeah, congratulations.
I thoroughly did not expect that. I voted for her.
Both amazing poets. Just congratulate you for being in the running, and thank you very much for being here. We've been talking to UP Poet Laureate 2013-2014, Russell Thorburn of Marquette, Kathleen Heidemann of Marquette, and Marty Akins of Ishpeming, the new UP Poet Laureate. I'm Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on Media Meet.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.